Welcome to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Martellaro, and this week my guest is the Mac Observer's Managing Editor, Jeff Gamet. Jeff, good afternoon. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me on. This is really awesome.
It's nice to have you on the show.
I feel all warm and fuzzy.
Oh, great. You know, the other day we were talking about, after the Mac Observer Daily Observation podcast, your show, about how you came to become the managing editor of the Mac Observer. Mm-hmm. I'd love to revisit that and have you tell your story about how that came to be.
How far back do you want me to go?
Well, I think you were talking about how you got into the publication business and you were working for a company that was doing pre-press or something like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. So if we go back that far, I was working in a printing company in their pre-press department, and they'd started sending me out to all of their clients as a consultant. And after a while, I realized they were making gobs of money by having me consult, and I was having to work two full-time jobs to not starve to death. So it seemed pretty smart to me to just start my own consulting business, which is exactly what I did. And that led to a lot of speaking gigs and then eventually to some writing gigs. And then when the advertising market tanked really bad in Colorado, I lost most all of my clients like very quickly because they went out of business. My clients were advertising agencies and printing companies and graphic design firms, and the market sucked for them, which means that eventually it did for me too. So then I really ramped up my writing efforts.
But that's how you became an expert on fonts and color matching on the Mac, right?
Yeah, I had to know a lot about fonts and font management. I had to know a lot about color management. I had to know a lot about PostScript, and then I had to know a lot about the printing side of things. So I had to understand how offset printing worked and how the different types of rip systems for direct-to-plate printing machines worked, and then. The whole digital printing was becoming a thing back then too. That kind of dates me. So I had to know a lot about how the whole printing and graphic design world worked. It kept my clients happy too.
You know, that doesn't apply directly so much to web publications, but throughout the years I've been working with you, I've noticed that your expertise in fonts and color has really come into play and helping us in various small aspects of publishing the Mac Observer.
Oh, thanks. Well, I know what I don't like when I see it. And that comes from having spent so much time dealing with really good designs and some really bad designs. And I'm not saying that's Mac Observer. It's just from my history dealing with the graphic design industry, I had to fix a lot of really poorly designed layouts before they could go on press back in the day. And then I also got to see some really great designs come in. And you learn a lot, not just from the really good designers that send you jobs, but from the really bad designers, because then you can see exactly what not to do. And you learn a lot about how to fix things. And that translates over to the web to a degree.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Good design is good design.
I've seen that in your fine hand in the images you create for the Mac Observer, the teaser images and the article images. They're just stellar.
You're being far too kind. I will take the compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, you create images on the Mac Observer that I couldn't even begin to create with my crude graphic skills.
Well, to be fair, I've had a lot of time in front of a computer screen with Photoshop and InDesign open, whereas you haven't. Those just aren't the apps that you needed to work with.
Right. So what happened after that then?
All right. So I ended up, I was actually researching a problem one of my clients was having, and the top hit that came up when I did my Google search was a Mac Observer article. And so I clicked through, and I don't even remember what it was, but it was exactly the right answer, which was awesome. And at the top of the article, there was this extra link, and it said, interested in writing for us? Click here. And I thought, well, you know, I'm looking for more writing gigs. Why not? And so I clicked on that and sent off some information. And then
was this Brian Chaffin who was querying?
It was Brian Chaffin and Dave Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it because I already knew Dave. And, because we were both at Macworld all the time, and we had matching circles of friends. And so, you know, we'd been out to dinner together, and I didn't put the pieces together that was the same Dave Hamilton, which is kind of silly because how many Dave Hamiltons are there in the Apple community?
Not many.
But when it all clicked together, Dave and I thought that was pretty cool. And and then Brian and I were also talking, and the next thing you know, I'm writing for the Mac Observer.
So just as a contributor?
Yes. I started as the morning editor. And it was a part-time gig, and it was great, and it was lots of fun, and it gave me the opportunity to continue to do some consulting. And actually, I think at the time I was working on my book too, which was called The Designer's Guide to Mac OS X. And that
was that the one from Peach Pit Press?
Yes. Yeah. And that was for Tiger, I believe. Okay, that's kind of sad.
Those were the days.
An hour ago that I can't remember which version of OS X I wrote the book for. But anyhow, you know, having a part-time gig with Mac Observer at the time was perfect because I was able to get those other things done. And then eventually they asked me to come on full-time, and that was great. And then after a while, I get this phone call from Dave, and he's like, Jeff, we need to talk about your job. And all I'm thinking is, are you kidding me? What's wrong? And it turns out he wanted to ask me to be the managing editor.
Well, you know, you're the only person I know who enjoys getting up as early as you do.
Well, see, that's one of the things when you live in Colorado, but you work on East Coast time.
Right.
You get up early. And I had gone from seeing very few sunrises consecutively in my life to every morning seeing sunrises. So I've seen almost every sunrise since I started working at Mac Observer.
Do you remember what computer, what Macintosh you were using when you first got your job?
I do. I was using a 12-inch PowerBook G4.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah, I had one of those in my past too. We thought those were so cute.
Oh, I loved that thing. And the funny thing is, I was using a Pismo before that. I loved that.
Uh-huh. The black plastic one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a G3, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, that was a G3. And I kept telling everyone, I'm not upgrading this until Apple releases a 12-inch screen that has Bluetooth and Wi-Fi built in, and FireWire had to be one of the options. And I just went down the list. And I kept thinking, I'm not going to be buying a new computer for a long time. And then that one comes out, and I'm like, well, crap. That's exactly the computer I wanted. And I bought it, and it was awesome, and it was exactly the computer I needed for a long time, which tells me that I was working on my book when I first started with Mac Observer. Because at one point, I realized this computer is no longer capable of handling what I need to do. So I had to go out and get a 15-inch MacBook Pro. And then I sent my 12-incher off to a friend, and she loved it and took care of it, and she even gave it a name, and it was awesome.
It's funny how we have affection for certain computers in our past. Some are sort of just duds, and some of them we just fall in love with.
Yeah, and that 12-incher, I loved that thing. It was exactly what I needed. And it was the only computer that Apple could possibly make that would convince me to give up a Pismo. I've missed that computer too.
Yeah, the transition from Pismo to the PowerBooks, so aluminum PowerBooks, mm-hmm. was just about the time, as I recall, when Mac OS X was coming out, right? Because I had a Pismo running OS 9 and...
Well, let's see. It wasn't the aluminum. It was the titanium PowerBooks at that point.
Oh, yeah. That was the first one. I still have one, by the way, in the basement.
No kidding. I remember the first time I saw one of those. And I experienced computer lust. I actually never did have a titanium. I went from Pismo right to the aluminum models.
I'm going to have to pull that out of the box someday and see if it still boots OS 9.
Oh, good times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of, well, there you go. That's the nutshell version of how I ended up doing what I'm doing now. And it's been a fun journey.
Do you remember when that was? Because I came on in December of 2006, as I recall. And by the time I came on, you were way ahead of me. And I'd asked you how many articles you'd written, and it was maybe 1,000 or 2 at that point.
Oh, I don't even know. I haven't been counting how many articles I've written. I would probably be quite surprised to find out how many articles I have written over the years.
Well, I bet I can tell you, because I've numbered every one of my articles as I've gone along, and I'm up to 4772. So I think you're probably up in the 6,000 range.
I don't know. It definitely counts as a lot. And I just looked. Okay, so the way I organize my articles that I write, every day gets its own folder, and then all those days get grouped into a month folder, and then those month folders go into a year folder. And I do not have all of my folders on my Mac anymore for all the years for TMO. So I have articles on my computer right now going back to 2008, and I started before that. So I'm not sure how many years I've been here now.
All you listeners out there, one of the remarkable things about Jeff is that he remembers most of the articles he's written. Because sometimes we're talking about, oh, did we cover that? And Jeff says, yeah, just a second. I remember writing that article back in 2011 or something. We all go, oh my God, this is amazing.
Well, the trade-off is I can't remember my own address. You know, so, but hey, at least, even though I can't find my way home, that's not true, I can find my way home, but it sounds funny when I say it that way. I can tell you when I've written an article, and in many cases, I can tell you when other people have written articles too.
So, what time are you getting up to do this morning editor job?
I get up at 5:30 in the morning.
5:30. And what's the first thing you do after you do not put your pants on and sit down at the computer?
The first thing I do is check Twitter and email at the same time. And that's because if there are any messages that came in since I last looked at my computer that I really need to see. So that would be something like maybe you or Brian has sent me an email mm-hmm. about a story, then I want to know right away. And then I'm watching Twitter as well, because if something interesting has happened between the time that I went to bed and got up, people have been talking about it on Twitter. So then I can see that and then start doing my research and figure out what to write for the day. And then a couple days a week, right before I start working on any of my articles, unless there's like something really big happening, what I'll do is look to see what amazing tip Melissa Holt has written, and if there's any edits, take care of those, and then get her piece published. It's so nice to know that a couple days a week when I sit down at my computer, there's going to be a really cool tip waiting from her.
Melissa's just an incredible writer. I really appreciate the work she does for the Mac Observer.
So do I. Yeah, she's written some really awesome tips.
Another thing that impresses me is how you have a nose for the news in the morning. When I when I'm reading late night or I catch something in the morning on Twitter and I think, wow, I found a juicy tidbit, turns out you've already written the article.
Well, when you've been in this industry, either as a consultant or a writer, you over time you learn what it is that's really interesting, not just to yourself, but to the people that you are contacting, whether you're contacting them as a consultant for them or you're contacting them as the writer that's giving them the information they're really interested in. And at first it was hard to tell what it was that was really important, but I had this really great transition into figuring it all out myself, because I was writing for a publication on the side called Design Tools Monthly, and that was like the publication that everyone in the design world went to every month to get the news that they needed. And so through the work that I was doing on that with the publisher of that, Jay Nelson, I learned a lot about how to figure out what it is that people are going to be really interested in hearing about. And that was great. And so when I came into Mac Observer, I had that under my belt too. And that made it much easier to transition from writing almost completely about the design industry as it relates to the Macintosh into talking about Apple in a more general sense.
You know, I wonder sometimes about the design industry. I wonder how things have changed in light of the new protocols on the web and the focus on the internet and Twitter and websites and HTML5. Is the design industry as vigorous and as it was before, or has it changed? Do you have any thoughts on that?
The design industry has changed quite a bit, and the tools that people are using in the design industry that have changed because of that. We've gone from a design cycle that could be days or weeks to design cycles that in many cases have to be hours. And that's because things are happening so fast on the internet, and we've taken out the big middle part where you have to produce all this physical support material to actually get a finished product, meaning you have to get plates made to go on press. You might have to get negatives shot so that you can then burn the plates that are going to go on press, and paper has to be cut to size, and there's all these other things that were happening when all the content had to be almost completely physical. And now that it can be done on the web, there's a much faster turnaround for a lot of this. And the design tools that people are using today really reflect that. I mean, there have been a lot of changes in Photoshop alone. And we'll look at the way you can export graphics out of Photoshop today as opposed to what we had many years ago. The idea of optimizing a graphic for the web wasn't something that Photoshop used to do.
Right.
But then that came along. Or in InDesign, you design a brochure and then export that as web content and then maybe massage it some to get it to look exactly the way you want in Dreamweaver or some other tool. There was a time when the idea of taking what you were creating for print and just rolling it over to web as well was just not conceivable. You had to start from scratch.
Well, I hope the magazine industry becomes more successful in figuring all this out, because I haven't been too happy with what I've seen in digital magazines. And there's still a lot of work to do there, but I think we're going to have to talk about that another time, because, you know, I think we're running out of time here.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, because I have some stuff to say on that topic.
We'll do this again and talk about that.
Awesome.
I want everyone to know that what an enjoyable experience it has been working with Jeff Gamet as the managing editor of the Mac Observer. It's been fun working with you for the last 9 years. Hard to believe.
Wow, 9 years. And it's been an absolute treat to get to work with you. It's when I heard you were coming on board, when that was the big discussion, I was really excited. And I'm glad you're still here.
Well, thanks. So, I want to thank you again for being on the show. It's been great talking to you. And that'll conclude this episode of the Mac Observer's Background Mode. We'll see you next time.